It's time now for Bridging the Gap, presented by Orange Partnership, where each month we meet local partners working together to close the communication gap between parents and their children and help all young people in our community live healthy and productive lives. This week, we've got three guests with us. We've got program coordinator at Orange Partnership, Mark Mitchell. Mark, thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
We also have substance use project manager at El Futuro, Jaylene Mendoza. Jaylene, thanks for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
And we also have Christopher Scoville, clinical director at Freedom House. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
So we just kind of introduced the idea of the Orange Partnership, a local coalition focusing on healthy communities and focuses its efforts on enhancing protective factors that could reduce the likelihood of young people turning to substance use. So let's just kind of get into how folks got involved here. Mark, let's start with you. How did you get involved and what is it that you do exactly for the Orange Partnership?
Wow, that's a really loaded question. Yeah. And I'll try to make it as concise as possible. So how I got started, I have a background in a whole bunch of different fields, but primarily education. I was a special education teacher in Durham County Schools, but oddly enough, I was never certified to do so. It got to the point to where they wanted me to recertify. I didn't really want to go down that path because I just didn't feel like that aligned with my future goals. So I started working for a nonprofit called Communities and Schools of Durham. That community nonprofit unfortunately closed. And then I started working for United Voices of Eflin Cheeks Community Center as a program coordinator there. And I was approached by Guyon Chambliss, and she basically saw the good work that I was doing with the students and thought I'd be a good fit with the Orange Partnership program. So I've been there for about 2 years, going on 2 years in December.
Outstanding. And that, you know, I ask what you do at the Orange Partnership, and I know that particularly in a job like that, you do kind of everything, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I definitely wear a lot of hats, but the main focus of my job and work responsibilities are with our ADAPT programming, which is our youth internship program. And then we also have clubs at both the high school and middle school level in Orange County as well.
That's the voice of Mark Mitchell, program coordinator at Orange Partnership. I wanted to get a little bit more into these programs. We see the phrase working upstream. What does that mean in your context?
Working upstream to me basically means putting out fires before they become like five alarm fires, basically. I always explain to the students that it's easier to, you know, prevent a fire from starting than trying to extinguish one when it's engulfed your home, a whole house. So again, just making sure that we can address problems before they become bigger issues that might become lifelong issues or life ending issues, unfortunately.
Which is kind of one of the pillars of what the Orange Partnership does, right? Get people in a circumstance where they don't feel the need to go to substance abuse.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's our goal.
That's the voice of Mark Mitchell. We're also joined by a couple other guests, including Christopher Scoville from the Freedom House. Chris, I wanted to get with you on this for just a moment because Freedom House Recovery Center deals with this a lot. And the topic of the month is BIPOC Mental Health Month that we recognize each year in July. Can you tell us a little bit more about Freedom House in general and then kind of the importance of that topic?
Absolutely. Freedom House Recovery Center has been around since 1974, starting on our Chapel Hill campus. We operate clinics and halfway houses in Chapel Hill, Durham, Warrenton, and Roxborough. We offer a number of services: outpatient therapy, medication management, substance use treatment, peer support services, crisis services, and residential services. This month is particularly important to Freedom House because we know that mental health affects every community, but access to care and experiences within the healthcare system are not always equal. And that's something that we address every single day in the type of care and the quality of the care that we bring to our clients. I think this month encourages earlier help seeking, which is part of our role in Orange Partnership in making sure that folks don't necessarily need to come to us in the future. We definitely are, you know, thinking about stigma and how that affects the care that we provide and bringing people into care and barriers around that. So this is a hugely important month for us, and it's hugely important for us every single day.
Makes a lot of sense. One of the things, you know, as I've grown older, having been somebody who came of age in the 90s, It is great to see, and this continues to be a thing, where the stigma around mental health has decreased like significantly during my adult life. And I love that. But to your point about access being a challenge, and particularly in some underserved communities, the stigma is, you know, a bigger deal in some of those communities than it is. And when we can just generally say that's gotten better, that disproportionately happens within certain communities. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the stigma and how, while that has improved, it's still something that we've got to be working on.
Absolutely. I think, you know, stigma, as you noted, can be more of a barrier in some communities than others. However, everyone is different, and we don't want to put everyone into some big group. Their stigma takes place in families, in neighborhoods, in communities, can come from anywhere. I do think it has changed, has improved, or reduced. Stigma has reduced in our society over the last decade or so, maybe a bit longer. I think part of that is because youth are more likely to be having these conversations, in part because of the work of agencies like Orange Partnership. You're seeing younger adults talking about mental health and substance challenges on social media in particular. So I think that's working to normalize the conversations, and that's how you reduce stigma, is normalizing the conversations. It's okay to talk about this. We know that people need support. We need to support one another. We know that recovery is possible, and that has to be the message.
That's Christopher Scoville, Clinical Director at Freedom House. We also have Jaylene Mendoza, Substance Use Project Manager at El Futuro. And kind of a similar question for you, Jaylene. What does El Futuro do to support community members, and what are the impacts that you see?
Yes, so one of the things that I really appreciate about El Futuro is that we look at mental health from a lot of different angles. While yes, we do provide psychiatry, therapy, and substance use treatment, we also try to support families before they are in those crises. For example, in my program, which is our Sin Ataduras program, our substance use program, we work with a lot of parents to be able to have those conversations with their children and be able to recognize those early signs and symptoms. We also work with students and youth in the community to be able to help understand more of the negative effects of substance use, whether it be alcohol, vaping, or other substances, through different interactive simulations or simulacros that we have in activities, just so they're able to provide a better understanding of those negative risks. And while therapy is at the heart of what we do, we're also helping build stronger families and being able to help have that communication with them and make healthier decisions.
It's the voice of Jaylene Mendoza from El Futuro. And I wanted to kind of open up this to all three of you now, just as we kind of touched on this already, particularly with Christopher, but just thinking specifically about BIPOC mental health, and more specifically in our communities, what are the major factors that contribute to that poor mental health? And I know that that's a loaded question as well. So whoever wants to take that on first.
Yeah.
Mark Mitchell from Orange Partnership.
Yeah. Just for starters, I know that with a lot of, you know, communities of color, religion is a big factor. It can be positive, you know, because you have that communal sense of coming together as a group. But in a lot of senses, especially like me growing up heavily Pentecostal Christian, it was like, pray to God, pray to God, pray to God, everything will be okay. And that is helpful. I feel like prayer is definitely helpful because you're, you know, putting energy into like positive affirmations and things of that nature. But also I feel like there is a sense that therapy isn't helpful. And then there are also barriers, in my opinion, from the respect of a lot of times you have to pay for therapy. So a lot of people don't have extra funding to put into those resources, even though they might be necessary or needed. So I definitely feel like there should be more approachable ways for people to get the therapy that they need that don't necessarily cost too much money. And I know that's something that, you know, that's a big issue, but at the same time, I feel like that's a big limiting factor on why a lot of people of color don't find the time or make the time to get therapy or things of that nature.
Any other thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I totally agree. I would add to that historical distrust and experiences, really horrible experiences with healthcare systems that folks coming from underserved minority communities have experienced. And that's, I think that plays a big part in this. And part of what we do at Freedom House Recovery Center is build trust to try to reduce that stigma, that mitigate some of those experiences, the consequences of those experiences. And as far as access goes, I think that can be a real challenge for folks, you know, coming from any community. And we work with folks with insurance who are uninsured. We try to help people get insurance coverage. We do everything we can to make our services accessible to anyone in the community.
It's the voice of Christopher Scoville. We also have Jaylene Mendoza. And Jaylene, let me know if I'm out of line on this one. But I feel like additionally, just like the news and the current political climate is a pretty big factor that is contributing to poor mental health in a lot of these communities as well, particularly when we look at the way the last year and a half or so has played out for immigrant communities in our area. That seems like it would be a massive strain on mental health for those communities.
Yes, I agree. Last year when we did hear a lot about immigration being in our communities, one of our fears was, are people going to come and seek our services because of that fear? Because they might not have a license, or they might not have a legal status in this country. So one of the fears that we had is them not coming to seek our services, but also still being in that situation where they also need basic necessities like groceries, just healthcare. So one of the things that El Futuro was able to do is rally together and be able to provide food drop off. And also because we are able to see a lot of our clients through telehealth and teletherapy, it's something that we were able to quickly mobilize and be able to provide that option for a lot of our clients who were recently wanting to start with therapy services.
One of the few pandemic silver linings is the proliferation of telehealth and mm-hmm. the fact that actually opens up some opportunities that maybe people weren't anticipating when all that went into place. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wanted to kind of open it up to the group again. Any advice that you might want to give to anyone struggling with their mental health and also how the rest of the community can help support BIPOC mental health throughout the year, not just in July?
I can speak a little bit about this. Recently, someone close to me did express how depression was affecting their daily life. And I think the most important thing that came out of that conversation was letting them know that they're not alone. Their feelings are very valid, and it's something that, while yes, it's very stigmatized, we need to start speaking up more about it. And while you may want to speak to a friend or a family member or a mental health professional, that's one of the first steps to getting help, is just talking to someone openly about it.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree. I also think that a lot of people need to reevaluate the way that they look at mental health as a whole. It does affect people, you know. Again, I think of, you know, individuals that have passed, you know, that were famous and looked like they had everything in the world, you know, Robin Williams, you know, one of the funniest guys ever. And unfortunately, you know, mental health led, you know, to his demise. So, again, I think that we just need to kind of reshape the way that we look at mental health as a whole. If you are somebody who is struggling with mental health, there are resources. And I know that we talked about like financial barriers and things of that nature. But again, I know Freedom House and, you know, El Futuro, Orange Partnership, and I know we'll do like a little PSA later to where we, you know, promote our different agencies. But again, if you're ever in need of any of these resources, please reach out to us. And if we can't, we don't have those resources personally, we'll definitely point you in the right direction.
I think I'm hopeful, though. I think there's been a lot of change, and I'm hopeful that we are going to see these conversations becoming more and more normalized. We are seeing that, I think, in our society, and that's something that all of us here are working on. And I think there's a lot of success, and I look forward to the future and seeing how that success plays out, and everyone in this room, everyone across the field plays a part of that. So I'm very hopeful about the future.
Yes.
Christopher Scoville, Mark Mitchell, and Jaylene Mendoza have been our guests. Thank you all so much for being here.
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Bridging the Gap, presented by Orange Partnership, a community collaborative working to close the communication gap between parents and their children so all young people can live healthy and productive lives. You can find more information at orangepartnership.org.